We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Glad you're with us on a Friday morning. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. As that sound you heard from Pete Carroll, CTSY, Seahawks.com, running gag, it's courtesy. And we are working through a lot of stuff this morning, including how your thighs have just thrown us off all morning, all day.
It's been a big part of the day. You know what, Trey? I made a decision somewhere along the way, and obviously it has been a lot going on in the world of sports and around the world in general in the last, you know, it feels like forever at this point. Time all runs together right now, and it's obviously a lot of serious, heavy stuff that we've been coping with, certainly, and we will continue to because it's important, and it's the direction that we should be moving in, finally, on a lot of these fronts, especially when it comes to the treatment of black people in this country. But when it comes to the treatment of me on this show, I've been sick and damn tired of everybody in our Twitter audience shaming my thighs for being out just because it's warm, and I like to wear shorts when I come over here in the morning. We're doing the show in the bleeping basement, for God's sake, and so I decided...
In the middle of a pandemic!
Friday is now my day, and that's thigh day, and that means it's going to be all skies out, thighs out for everyone in our audience to see right now. I work hard for this, all right? I work hard for this as a grown man trying to keep my body tight for everyone watching right now, so, for everyone listening right now, and they don't seem to care or appreciate that.
So you just said it's Friday, it's my day, it's thigh day, it's sky day, right?
It's thigh day, yeah.
Okay, and I just want to say, why day?
No, that's the one question you don't ask is why. You ask why not sooner.
You always ask why. You always ask why in every situation.
So it's about getting shamed. You get shamed for your thighs. There's something going on Twitter. Somebody had sent me, there is a picture of me on some site that you can buy.
Oh, God.
A picture, a signed picture I did. I don't know. A site, one of these sites, memorabilia sites.
Awesome.
How many X's are in
there?
There's
an 8x10 picture of me with the Eagles in an action shot. It's actually for sale for $53.99.
Should we buy it?
And dude said to me, is this worth it or highway robbery? I said, oh my God, that's highway robbery. But the story continues, you know, people making comments about it and stuff. And then some guy said, I remember I was a kid at the Eagles training camp in Westchester when I was playing for the Eagles. And I remember all you players were coming off the field and I had my hand out and you gave me a high five. And he goes, I just saw number 90 and I looked at my dad and I said, who was that? And he said, my dad said to me, if it wasn't Reggie White or Jerome Brown, it doesn't matter.
Well, can I?
To which my wife replied, hey, we know who we are.
I will say that fan had a better experience at Eagles training camp than I did with you. That one time you completely blew me off.
It was probably a hot day then, and you probably aggravated me with some stupid question.
No, I didn't even get to ask the question. You said, I talk on Wednesdays. I'm like,
you know what?
Right,
I saw you and said, he's going to ask a stupid question.
You know what?
You were afraid of my journalistic laser-like questions coming out to eviscerate you.
Oh, man.
Oh, dear God. Wait a minute. We have a rejoin dedicated to that moment from you guys. That's right.
The field was kind of down in a hole. The fields were, so it was always hot and muggy, and it just held it down there. It was not fun.
Is this Westchester? Westchester. Yeah,
yeah.
I covered a camp there, and you blew me off once.
Did I really?
To ask you a question. Yeah, you were a big jerk.
Actually, to be fair, it wasn't you at all. You know what it was? It was Keith Jackson.
Oh, okay.
It was Keith Jackson. Yeah. He was like, I wasn't talking to you. It was Keith. It was Keith Jackson, and he said, I talk on Thursdays. I'm like, oh, okay, and the PR guy says, he doesn't talk on Thursdays.
I was just saying, because you knew when you said, when I said to you, I only talk on Wednesdays, I'm like, I would never say that to anybody, okay. I love that, why would I talk to you?
Why would I talk to you, of all people?
Okay,
that is a good bit of shaming there. Well,
shift
luckily sports. Luckily for us. Alex Cora felt like talking to Marley Rivera, and we hadn't heard from Cora in a while after everything that went down. And obviously, the sign-stealing scandal feels like it took place when the moon landing did at this point. And so Marley Rivera, our ESPN MLB writer, got a chance to talk to Alex Cora. I believe this was at a charity event, but he spoke pretty candidly on his perception of a lot of these things. Here were Marley's takeaways.
The biggest takeaway from my conversation with Alex Cora earlier today was that he accepted full responsibility for his role in 2017 when he was the Astros bench coach, but made it very clear that it was something that the entire team was all in. Cora refused to wear the label of being the sole mastermind of the sign-stealing operation and specifically called out Astros former GM Jeff Lunau for implying that he was. And in terms of the rumors of a possible return to the Red Sox organization once this suspension is over at the end of the 2020 season, Cora said that wasn't his focus at this time, but used the word absolutely when I asked whether he was interested in a return to baseball.
And he definitely didn't worry about mincing words on this one.
No.
He said, if there's one thing I'm absolutely sure of, it is that it was not a two-man show. We all did it. And let me be very clear, I'm not denying my responsibility because we were all responsible. And then, Mike, he went on to bring up Jeff Lunau's name as well.
Yeah, here it is right here. He said, out of this whole process, there's one thing I completely reject and disagree with is people within the Astros organization singling me out, particularly former now general manager Jeff Lunau, as if I were the sole mastermind. The commissioner's report sort of explained in its own way what happened, but the Astros players have spoken up and refuted any allegations that I was solely responsible. So I'm shocked to learn that former Astros GM Jeffrey Lunau was not completely candid at one time, because it seems like every time he's talked, he hasn't been completely candid.
Yeah, and I guess if you're Alex Cora, I can understand the response there and why he'd feel compelled, especially hearing it from that source. It doesn't sound like Jeff Lunau, really that front office was a place that was overly liked around the rest of baseball in a lot of ways, but Alex Cora isn't saying anything that the rest of us didn't already know. Like, part of this was, we lumped everyone associated with that. Like, everyone, no one assumes it was a two-man operation, though it was punished like that. But from the player's side, we look at all these guys and the stain that they're going to have to wear as cheater.
Yeah, and again, baseball decided not to punish the players for those that may have forgotten about this incident.
Understandable.
Because they used the players for the information. And obviously, using them for information, they then weren't going to be punished. So basically, baseball saying we never would have got all this information if we couldn't have the players be very open with us. And for them to be open with us, we weren't going to punish them. And I don't think anybody doubts Alex Cora, AJ Hinch are both going to be managing in the bigs again. Is Jeff Lunau going to be an executive in the league again? Because remember,
this won't help.
Well, not only that, but that Astros management, they had other issues.
Like
they
I
had
said,
a lot of issues going on with them. So he's got a really kind of a bad mark against him going forward. So I wonder if he has a future at that level again in baseball, because I know those managers do, and I know they'll be going to be managing again.
Yeah, those managers certainly do, but we know a lot of Major League Baseball right now, people talk about being governed by the front offices, and especially these ones where the Wall Street influence like this has come over, and I know for some people it's to the detriment of the game, it basically turned it into a spreadsheet, and even this cheating scandal was operated largely through a lot of really advanced computing that went into the way that they stole signs in real time in these games, but I think you're right. I think going back to that experience in the clubhouse after one of their playoff games where it's, you know, Jeff Lunau in this front office condoning the shouting that happened to a female reporter in there. Some of the
had to walk that one back and change the story there as well.
But like when you lump all of that together, I think that kind of makes him plutonium going forward.
I agree.
And as we're going to see, like part of what that people have argued that they have done to Major League Baseball, and part of the reason some players maybe have argued against it is they feel like it's made guys replaceable. Your value is solely what you offer in the spreadsheet. You could argue that the influx of interest of people like Jeff Lunau with his background in baseball could make him a little bit more replaceable, because if you get someone with that background and knowledge coming into the situation, what about that was so proprietary to Jeff Lunau? That would be the interesting question going forward.
I agree. And then the other manager involved who never got a chance to manage was Carlos Beltran, who got fired from the Mets. So I think we all think he'll get a shot again at this. The on-field guys, we think.
Assuming baseball has ever played again.
Well, yeah.
Ever.
Which we do believe it will be, or will be, according to Rob Manfred. It's just a matter of how many games and the money and blah, blah, blah and all of that. But, man, talking about the Astros sign stealing. I mean, it does feel like, wait, when did this happen? And this
2004.
This was going to be the hot news in the season for every team they traveled in an away game. The reception now, once we get back to baseball, we probably won't have that. There won't be fans. There will be fans in Texas. The governor said you can fill it up to 50%. So they could have some home fans. Now, if they play the Rangers, they may have some, you know, fans there that jump a little bit. But they are really kind of skating through this thing.
They could go from having been the biggest villains in baseball, having the most entertaining road schedule ever, to maybe having the biggest home field advantage in the entire sport just because of where they're situated.
I mean, think of where we are and the two biggest things going on, not in the country but in the world. Who's going to look at the sign ceiling and go, yeah, let's stay hot on that topic? I mean, it's going to be like such a, okay, why do we even care anymore about that? And it's going to slide right by.
You know what? Part of me hopes it doesn't, that when we get back to sports, we snap back at it. Because even right now, talking about it feels normal. It feels good again.
If anybody's going to do it, it's us, because we are the pettiest show in America.
That's a fair point.
And we need to remind baseball, when it comes back, bring the pettiness to these guys.
Yes, please do that.
Bring the pettiness to these guys, and we'll see what happens. That would be a smart pick.
That would be a smart pick. It's time for some smart picks brought to you by Redbox. The smart pick on Redbox is the king of Staten Island, now on early release on demand, the semi-autobiographical story of Pete Davidson from SNL, starring Davidson and Marissa Tomei. It's directed by Judd Apatow. Plenty of other Judd Apatow movies on Redbox as well. 40-Year-Old Virgin, Trainwreck, Knocked Up, This Is 40, Funny People. And, of course, in sports this weekend, we have some NASCAR coming back right now at the track at Homestead, Miami. Right. We've got the Charles Schwab Challenge in Fort Worth going on. I have a feeling that's what Trey, if he's not already glued to it right now, is going to be glued to it this weekend.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Chad.
What happened?
Exactly in that one. So I probably go with that. Honestly, like, I found myself, and a lot of the talk around the sport of NASCAR had been the banning of the Confederate flag from future races, but, you know, the sport making its stance very clear on that. It was cool to see guys like Alvin Kamara reaching out and saying, oh, this makes me interested in the sport right now. And a lot of people look at that and say, well, he's just glomming on. Well, you know what? There's something to be said for opening the door of the sport. And I heard Ryan McGee and Marty Smith both talk about this. You're opening the sport up to other people that maybe because of that and because of the overall tone it created felt unwanted. And so I'm very interested to watch that. But it's made me interested in watching and checking out some of these races now, because you see, all right, this could be something moving in the right direction. We've seen drivers speaking out. And surprise, surprise, that might be more appealing to hear what these drivers have to think about some of the issues that all of us are dealing
with. And by the way, their sport has been running smoothly from the pandemic side of it. You know, they've had to deal with both sides of this thing as a sport coming back, with the testing and their procedures, and it all seems to be running smoothly. They're going to start to go to different places around the country. They're going to start to open it up to fans, which is going to bring the banning of the Confederate flag into play a little more. But they have come back with a good plan from the pandemic side and acted swiftly on the social injustice side.
It's been remarkable, and we'll see what happens when they keep the races going this weekend. Meanwhile, we have to keep something going. It is our next tale of the tape for this Friday.
Yes, and a reminder that you can rent all the newest and freshest releases fresh from the theater at the box or on demand. Also available at Redbox On Demand, Grease, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, both of which are featured in our Tale of the Tape coming up here. So we've got a very interesting day. It's our Friday Tale of the Tape that we usually do around here, our fictional fight cards that we started to make up because, quite frankly, we were bored. We didn't have actual sports.
Right.
And even now that we have them back, we kind of just like these. I don't know if anyone else likes them, but we like them a lot. We've enjoyed these today.
The ones today have been high school characters, high school movie characters. The first round was McLovin against Napoleon Dynamite, and McLovin won that one 54-46%.
Close race.
The second round was not close.
Nailed
the second
it.
Round was, and that was awkward category. Second round was, why are we friends with them? And it was Steve Stifler from American Pie and Regina George from Mean Girls, and Stifler ran roughshod over Regina George, 81-19. So that was an absolute runaway. But, of course, we save the best for last.
Yeah, so this is where it's going to get interesting. At Golic and Wingo, you can vote on these in honor of all the high school graduations going on around the country this month. We wanted to really get back to our roots with a lot of this. And our roots in this show are singing, and they are dancing. And, boy, do these two movies make good use of singing and dancing. Let's see our first challenger up in the final round of this voting.
Ferris Bueller lives by one motto. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Bueller, Bueller, Bueller.
Bueller has no intention of spending a perfect spring day indoors. After convincing his parents that he is so sick he can't get out of bed, but not sick enough to see a doctor, Ferris heads out on the town with Cameron and Sloan for a day to remember in Chicago. It doesn't matter that he's missed school 9 times during his senior year, or that he is not actually Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago. Ferris lives an entire life in one afternoon. He has an expensive lunch, sees some art, catches a foul ball at a Cubs game, and sings Donka Shane at a parade, all while convincing Cam that his life doesn't suck even after he throttles his dad's car into the woods. Somehow, Ferris is able to dupe Principal Rooney, his parents, and get the girl of his dreams because, well, because this is a John Hughes movie and everything always works out.
You're Abe Froman.
Well done.
The Sausage King of Chicago.
What a movie.
Sloan is like one of my original movie crushes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It absolutely.
Well, you had to be
He's going to marry me.
Yeah. And then he's running back and he'll be past those two girls sunbathing. Hi, I'm Ferris.
Yeah. Immediately goes off there. So Ferris's intentions, not sure if they are pure. Let's see who he is going up against.
Look at me. I'm Sandra D. Lousy with ver. Anyway, a summer fling turns into the real thing when Sandy decides not to head back down under and spend the school year at Rydell High. Trying to gel with a group of clicky 30-year-old looking high school students gets off to a rough start for our heroine. But a winding road that includes joining a gang, racing for pink slips, getting dropped like a bad habit at the American Bandstand Dancing Contest by the far too handsy Danny Zuko, ultimately ends in love. Danny and Sandy are able to make amends and find their way past all of this through the majesty of song and also cigarettes and leather pants and a car that could fly because it was automatic, systematic, and hydromatic. I guess that's why they called it Grease Lightning. Yeah.
Nailed it. I love that show.
Shout out to our guy, Ryan Rucco, for going all in on the singing. His fiance, Andrea, for lending her voice to the Bueller, Bueller, Bueller in that one.
Awesome.
We've got a real good thing.
Tell me about
there.
It, stud.
Oh,
I
God,
got
I love
chills. It. They're multiplying. And I'm losing control from the power you're supplying. It's electrifying.
Wow.
And scene.
So right now, so there you go. Man. Ferris Bueller against Sandy. Ferris Bueller, Ferris Bueller's day off. Sandy from Greece. Right now, Ferris Bueller has a pretty good lead, but we still have 40 minutes left to vote on that one. Either way, man, two great shows.
Listen, Greece was a seminal movie for...
It absolutely
It is super problematic when you look back on it now.
Listen, again, under the lens of when it was made.
Yeah.
However.
Yeah.
However.
However.
I feel like Ferris is going to do a tap dance.
Who didn't? Who didn't when they were in school? When you look back, going, God, I wish I did that when Dunk I was in high school.
Shame.
I mean, what he
darling,
did,
darling, Donka Shane.
Hi, little Donka Shane.
Oh, I recall Central Park in fall.
Oh my God!
You tore your dress.
Devolved what a mess. Is what
that whole
done.
I confess
that whole parade scene is so iconic. Like I'm someone
incredible.
Who I'm someone who lives life looking for a situation where one day I'll be caught in one of those flash mobs where I'm waiting in like what used to be before we did social distancing, like the line going into TSA at the airport, and someone would just all of a sudden start snapping their fingers,
break
and I'd realize we're all gonna break out in song and dance together.
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller lived that in a movie that in its nature is not a musical the way Grease.
No, not at all.
That was one of those things where I go, all right, so it is possible.
Yeah.
So we can get this done so my dream can become a reality.
Everything about that movie, pardon my French, But Cameron's is so tight. If you put a lump of coal up there in a week, you would have a diamond. I mean, there are so many good lines from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So go ahead and vote. And
let's go look at Wingo. Check it out.
We are all fans of Grease, but I think Ferris is going to have a field day.
He's got a good lead right now. We'll see where it ends. Again, we have, like I said, 40 minutes left up till the end of the show. We'll give you the final results as we kiss off for the week.
And it was Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like, last week, apparently, according to the movie.
Yeah, so we had McLovin's birthday last week.
It was June 3rd, and the game. I think it was last week that this when he was at the game was filmed when they were showing highlights of that game.
The Cubs game at Wrigley.
Yeah, the Cubs game at Wrigley, right.
And the principal, whose name escapes me right now.
Rooney.
Yeah, he's in the restaurant. He says, what's the score? And the guy says, nothing. And then he says, who's winning? And the chef goes, the Bears.
Rooney, you're a
dead man. And then he walks under the bus, and someone in the notebook says, Rooney eats it.
Oh,
Golic and Wingo presented by Progressive Insurance. Awesome. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Speaking of baseball, and not a day off. Coming up, it's been 22 years since the home run race of 1998 captured a nation, and a lot has changed in what we know about that race now as opposed to then. So how should we view it through the lens of today's knowledge? We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you on a Friday where we have sort of gone off the rails. We apologize for that, and we'll try and do better.
You can apologize. Yeah, I'm not sorry for a damn thing.
Actually, you know what? I'm not apologizing.
At this point.
I'm really not. But coming up Sunday, we got another one of the great ESPN documentaries, 30 for 30. This one is called The Long Gone Summer. Of the 1998 home run chase between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, in which Mark hit 70, and I think Sosa hit 62.
66.
66. I shorted him.
Yeah, you did.
I apologize. 64, 66 that year. Shorted him by four. And it's going to be great. I'm excited to see it. I wish it was longer, right? There's only two parts. To me, you could have done five episodes on this one easy.
Well, because it feels so emblematic of the era, right? Like that specific home run race seems to just define that time period in baseball so much. And I've talked about it on the show a lot. Like, I was a steroid era kid. Like when I was coming up and I was getting to that age where sports were starting to seep into my psyche like that, the steroid era in baseball, this home run race, Barry Bonds a few years later and what he did for the sport and what he, I mean, it all was just such a strange time now looking back to be your foundation for baseball because of what we know it's looked at for in the modern era.
And for me, that was my first summer here at ESPN. I'd been in St. Louis the previous 6 years and was there when the Cardinals and then manager Tony La Russa brought him over from Oakland. He was going to be a rental player and then he fell in love with St. Louis and they signed him and he became a cultural icon.
Listen, and baseball needed this. Remember just 4 years earlier, the strike in 94 and what that did, and baseball needed some spark to come back. And boy, this was a hell of a spark in 98.
This was. And for more on the discussion of what that summer was like and what the documentary is going to be like, we're delighted to be joined now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line by the guy who I badgered before a lot of pregame and postgame questions for a few years in St. Louis, Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa. Tony, always good to hear from you. Good to catch up with you. It's sort of fun to look back at that summer now and reminisce about what it was and in some ways what it wasn't, but most importantly, the joy it brought so many people.
Well, it was an amazing, from day one, actually. I think one insight was because of what Mark did in 2 months, the year before, 97, that in spring training, as you know, the first day he was asked, you know, can you break, you know, Maris and Ruth's record? from the first day of spring training. So he carried that and had that amazing opening day and then proceeded to go, and then the competition with Sammy. But I've had a lot of teammates on that ball club say when they're asked their most exciting moment of their career, and they'll say 98.
And along those lines, because McGuire, what he had come off the year previous, as you just explained, so there was a lot of hype around him. At what point during the season, Tony, did you go, oh, wow, okay, this is not only a home run race, but a home run race for the ages, bringing Sosa, getting Sosa involved?
Well, the first part, Mike, was just, you know, Mark's part of it. You know, Sammy burst on the scene and then became, you know, that thrilling duel. The first part was just, you know, Mark, as a rookie in 87, you know, he had this amazing timing thing where he could hit for power. And then as he improved as a hitter, I mean, he really improved his stroke and became a 300 hitter, really smart about the adjustments with pitchers. It looked like the sky was the limit for him as he went into it, because a lot of things were coming together for him as a professional hitter and then the powers of concentration. You know, once Sammy got there, I'd say probably, you know, sometime, you know, maybe June, when you realize, wait a minute, you know, this is for real with both of them. And that's only 2 months in. So for 4 months, we knew that it was going to be a contest, and it was a thrill to watch it.
And Tony, I'm curious, because you mentioned the media brought that up, almost the media, and certainly everyone felt it. Was it something that was talked about much for you guys in the clubhouse that was actually spoken about?
Well, among us, as we got into it, you know. But, you know, Mark, as you may or may not know, you know, Mark is basically a shy guy.
Very.
And is not an ego guy. And, you know, some of those Oakland A's teams, you know, had a lot of guys that were – front and center. You know, Mark was in the club. I was just laughing. You know, he loves comedians and going to comedy shows. So, you know, Mark would not get into the conversation. You know, he just wasn't. He was going to go about his work. That's one thing. He had this amazing discipline, actually, from the first day of his career to the day. You know, whether it's the way he eats, the way he works out, or whatever. But he was going to go about it one day at a time. I'm going to take spring training, get ready for opening day, and then go 162. So. We were discussing, especially in the second half of the season, but Mark, you know, we just wouldn't be a part of it. You know, it's just not something he was just, yeah, I just got to go out tomorrow and get some good at bats and help us win.
How did it compare though, Tony? I know when like a pitcher's throwing a no hitter in the dugout, nobody goes near him. So when McGuire is getting close, forgetting even the matchup with Sosa, getting close to the record, how were people treating him in the dugout? Were they not saying anything like you do to a pitcher, or were they cheering him on to get it?
Well, it was like 180 degrees different from a no-hitter, because it was an everyday thing, and it was building. And, I mean, from the day, you know, from the moment he showed up at the ballpark, you know, how big fell you hit one a day? How many are you going to hit today? And,
yeah.
And you know, had fun with it. You know, and like I say, if you check with any teammate over as many years, they will tell you that Mark was right there with the most popular teammate, because he never had the ego trip and stuff like that. So he would have fun with it and then go to work. But no, they were, you know, they were pushing him, praising him. I think, and Trey would know this, when the game was over, if we lost and he had a home run, you know, he didn't really want to talk about the home runs publicly with the press, because we got beat. That's what he was taught. If he hit a home run and it was meaningless, he didn't really want to talk about it. He wanted to talk about, you know, Brian Jordan or Ray Langford or, you know, somebody that had done more to win the game. So it was never about him, but the guys had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, he just played along with it, but he just relentlessly went about his work.
He certainly did. As Tony La Russa was with us again, he was with Mark McGuire when he was a rookie in Oakland, then brought him to St. Louis as a rental. And before we get into anything else, I do have to tell this one story. Tony, you probably remember this. After he was coming as a rental player, and then he fell in love with St. Louis, and he signed a contract. And his first day after the press conference, or the first game, rather, after that press conference where he'd signed the contract to stay in St. Louis, he went into the batter's box, and everybody at Busch Stadium just stood and applauded. He had to get out of the box. He's laughing because he knows this story. And I think it was the first pitch at that at-bat after he'd signed that contract. He hit a home run to left. left center field that had to be over 500 feet, and it dotted the eye on the scoreboard over Mark McGwire. And it, I mean, he just, Tony, he had a sense of the moment that I don't think I've ever seen anybody athlete have before.
Yeah, well, there was, I just think that, that's part of the story, because that's why I mentioned the spring training thing. The expectation, the attention, they didn't also all of a sudden appear, you know, after the All-Star break. I mean, they were there from day one, but he had developed this amazing ability, you know, this, the ability that we all would recognize in a great player in any sport, where he could focus and concentrate on playing the game and basically tune everything out, everything else out. In fact, before we quit, let me know, because there's a, to me, is a great example that, the, you know, the last three games of the season, but that was, you know, the one you pointed out about his first appearance after he signed the contract. But that was, Mark developed a concentration and a focus that was the only way that he could have dealt with the pressures and the expectations. I mean, he could just concentrate on, in fact, he, when he was a hitting coach for a couple of years there at the end of my time at Oakland, you know, he would say, you're basically see ball, hit ball. I mean, that's what it came to at the moment, but obviously it was more to hitting than that.
And certainly, as we're talking to Tony La Russa here on Golic and Wingo, I think people, as we go along, it's important to remind everyone of that, because the conversation obviously also does correct involve and turn to steroids and that conversation when it comes to this home run race, but it's not to ever discount the skill that also goes into that, all the other things that you need to be. But Tony, for you, I mean, when Mark called you and apologized for the steroids and told you he was going to come clean and that part of things started to become a part of the story, what was that conversation like for you?
Well, it was very limited in the sense that part of what he did was the HGH, which, you know, a bunch of guys got into during that time, and you had to get a prescription for, so it wasn't illegal. He had a couple of years there in Oakland where we really feared that his career was going to be over because of plantar fasciitis in his heels, lost a lot of time. And so, you know, he had some of that going for the for his injuries, and then later on for his back. You know, if you saw Mark in 87 and you saw what he was as he went along, you know, he became very smart about his diet. He really, you know, as he got bigger, he got trimmer. You know, he quit eating fried foods and stuff like that. I know that, and I, you know, I've been a staunch defender because I know with Dave McKay, our program never allowed anything illegal that we knew when we were not policemen. But I really believe the great majority of what Mark represented was a growth as a hitter and as a person. And he dabbled in it because he got into it in a couple of off seasons, you know, whatever the explanation is. But I don't think it had, I don't think it persisted with him. And that's why my answer is, it was very limited. I think the great majority of what Mark accomplished, and in fact, later in his career, you know, I mean, he had 29 home runs his last year in 2001 with 300 at-bats with a bad back. And we talk about integrity and that if you cheat like that, you don't have integrity. You know, Mark had signed a two-year contract with $30 million that the organization had signed, and he walked away from it after the 2001 season. He could have stolen the money, and he said, no, I can't play to that until Mr. DeWitt, you know, I'm done. So, you know, I have a lot different perception of Mark. And to this day, if you see him, you know, he still works out. He looks great. And if his back feels pretty good, he can still hit it a mile.
Yeah. So, Tony, along those lines of him involved in what he did and Sammy Sosa as well, when we look back on that year, when you look back on that year, because of the talk of the steroids around it, does it diminish at all what that year was for Mark and Sammy?
Well, it has to, you know, and I believe that at whatever date you want to pinpoint that, you know, sometime in the early 90s, you know, with, you know, Caminiti or, you know, Jose, whoever it was, you know, I'm not going to start getting into names and it's not the point of this conversation. Whenever it started to become apparent that there was stuff going on, that era till about the, you know, the early 2000s when, you know, we were allowed to do testing, you know, once the union and MLB got together on it. I think that, you know, that whole period's got an asterisk, a black mark, whatever it is that you have to say, look, you know, there's some stuff that happened here. Unfortunately, it was happening with pitchers too. So, you know, I forget who just mentioned it earlier. It wasn't a question of, you know, not having skill because you still, that, you know, a lot of guys bulked up and couldn't do much more. But the effect of that on minor leaguers and high schoolers is a bad period in our game. And that's why it may be hard for some people to focus on what was going on in 98. But if you take the moment, man, it was beyond exciting. And like I say, before we leave, give me a heads up because I want to tell you the last three-game story.
All right. Go ahead. Let's get it out there. Absolutely. Tell us.
All right. And, you know, and I've followed Flex all my life, you know, and I see, you know, the great clutch performances, you know, with those Orr shot. I just watched, you know, 5 weeks of The Last Dance and marveled at what the Bulls accomplished. And Michael in particular, to me, you know, the greatest athlete competitor of our time. But going into that last weekend, you know, he had gotten, the market gotten to 62 first. And then, you know, Sammy kept coming. So we got into the last weekend, going into Friday, we're playing the Expos, and he was a home run behind. And, you know, there was a lot of stories there about if Sammy finished ahead. You know, Sammy, very big personality, having a lot of fun with it. And, you know, the story could have been written that, you know, Mac got there first, but Sammy won the home run race. And what he did the last 3 days against Montreal, in my opinion, ranks in the conversation with the greatest clutch performances of any athlete, Michael Phelps, anybody you talk to in any sport. Because against the Expos with Philippe Alou managing, and he had promised they were going to compete against almost every at-bat he took that weekend. They threw a couple balls inside where he had to dodge it. He had 5 home runs, one on Friday, 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday, with everything on the line, not just doing the thing, but knowing that, you know, he won. By that time, he wanted to win the home run race. And in my opinion, what he did that last weekend, and he was on the fumes, was one of the great clutch performances of an athlete in any time, any sport.
You're 100% right, because he could have broken the record and not hold the record.
Right, exactly.
And that's remarkable. Right. Yeah. Tony, it is always good to talk to you. Great to catch up with you, my friend. Hope you and yours are well, and hopefully we'll talk again soon, okay?
Well, I enjoy listening to you guys. Do a great job. Thank you.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Napa Know How. Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Nailed it.
Just wasn't in our range, you know?
And I'm losing control from the power you're supplying. It's electrifying.
Wait for it.
You better shape up, because I need a man. And my heart is set on you. You better shape up. You better understand. To my heart, I must be true. Nothing left for me and you.
Oh, I'm physically worn out.
See you later.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, octave, you know what? So, like, one time I was in Lake Harmony in eastern Pennsylvania at a friend's lake house one weekend, and there's this bar around there called Shenanigans, and they've got a karaoke set up there that's world-class, big stage on there, all this stuff. And I actually did a duet of Summer Lovin' from Grease where I played the part of Sandra D. And I got to say, I nailed it. Now, I had a little bit more of that octave back in the day.
How hammered were you?
Oh, I was so drunk. They had this room on the side called the Boom Boom Room. And it was like where the bar turned into a little club. And it was wild over there, man. I fell on the floor a few times there. I was politely asked to leave.
Wow.
It was a lot.
Where do we?
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo, trying to make your eardrums bleed and your eyes probably
bleed.
Burn shut.
Bleed
well,
as well.
The glare coming off the thigh.
So let's quickly just having Tony La Russa on. Yeah, thinking about that home run race in '98, coming off the strike in '94, and as we know, the steroid era then as well. And even Tony La Russa said, just a few minutes ago. Yes, it does diminish it some, but yeah. Man, I'll tell you, watching that race,
it was
watching
so much fun.
Breaking into coverage of any other, of a show or other channels when these guys were batting, it was incredible watching this race.
It's remarkable to think about now in the way we look at baseball.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just 22 years ago, you tuned in every night. I mean, it was all Mark McGwire until June when Sammy hit 20 home runs in the month of June. And then everybody started giving the ball back. That was the amazing thing. Like when he hit either 62 or 70, it was at Busch Stadium, and the kid out of the stands came down and said, "Mr. McGwire, I have something that belongs to you."
Isn't that amazing? Well, remember, it wasn't the 62nd one, the one that broke the record.
Yes.
It was like a line shot. It was like a laser.
Like a laser.
But the amazing thing is he broke it first. But he was trailing. He could have lost the home run race to Sammy Sosa. It would have been like when Golden State set the record for regular season wins, didn't win the championship. Nobody really cares. Nobody would have cared if Mark McGwire broke it first because they both ended up breaking it if Sosa would have beat him. That part of it would have been forgotten. But he has that 5 home runs against Montreal, as Tony said, the last weekend, and wins that race 70-66.
It is amazing. And like you said, this is different. We talk so much about Reggie Bush and the disassociation with USC ending this week. Nothing about Reggie Bush's improprieties, the money that he took, affected the outcome on the field, right? Like none of it was performance-based.
Exactly.
And so we know with this one, the steroids obviously are performance enhancers by their name. And so we can't help but look back on this differently. But like you said, they can't take the feeling away. They can't take away.
It was so much fun.
What a lift that was for baseball at a time where it needed it. So Major League Baseball and everyone around it can condemn it as much as they want.
Yep.
It saved the sport in a way that baseball will never be able to fully quantify.
1,000% agree with that.
100,000,000% agree with that. So again, Long Gone Summer, part one, coming up this Sunday night. Coming up on Monday's edition of Golic and Wingo, probably less thigh and less singing. Yeah. But hey, I can't make a guarantee.
But right now, cheers!